Yo, yo, yo. Thanks for listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. Upgrade to a new Chevrolet with new safety and technology features, lower maintenance for the same or better payment, only at Lakewood Chev. Click on the icon right here on the website. Get to our big guest of the day, brought to you by Shatified for the most stylish cuts and straight razors in town. Walk-ins welcome at all four Edmonton area locations, including the new one in Windermere at 6251 Andrews Loop. Get Shatified at shatified.com. Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Kevin, Cam Talbot got Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday off. Probably a wise decision to do that for him right now, because he's looking down the stretch, and then once again in the playoffs, he'll be playing every second day.
Yeah, we've talked about this kind of throughout this season, the workload, and obviously he's been asked about it, and he's handled it remarkably well. As a matter of fact, it's one of the reasons I think he should be a Vezina finalist this year, is in a season where more and more I hear from longtime established NHL goalie coaches and NHL goalies that this has been a tough year to sort of stay on top of your game mentally more so than physically on a night-in, night-out basis with the schedule, the compressed schedule, the oddness of the five-day break. There's just been a lot of things different this year, especially in the East, some of the offensive younger players and more dynamic offensive attacks that we're seeing. It's been a tough year for goalies, and he's sort of kind of bucked a lot of the trends. But what you start to worry about as we head down the stretch is, does it eventually catch up with him? And, is it too late to start resting him? We saw this happen with Washington last year, where Braden Holtby looked fine down the stretch and they planned to rest him late in the season. Well, then they ran into him chasing Brodeur's 48 win streak, and they ended up playing him more than they wanted down the stretch. And, talking to some people there, they felt like it cost him in the playoffs. There were some instances where you could see him just not himself, coming out of his technique, guessing a little bit, not trusting his game, and it cost him goals at inopportune times. Not that he was terrible, but if you knew him and knew his game carefully, he didn't stick with it at key times. And to me, that was a sign of mental fatigue. And so this year, you watch how the Washington Capitals have done it, and it's been a lot more Philip Grubauer steadily throughout the season, not overtaxing Holtby, who was a goaltender who, much like Talbot says, feels better when he plays more. They found a way to keep him in rhythm in practice and not tax him as often this season in games. If you're Edmonton, it's probably a little too late for that. So certainly at the very least, you need to find a balance now in the last 2 weeks between getting him that little bit of a breather without losing all those things he relies on in terms of timing and rhythm and in that sort of mode, game mode, to feel good to this point in the season. And it's, you trust the goalie coach, he knows him best, and you trust them to sort of figure out what that schedule looks like, and you trust Laurent Brossoit, coming off a nice performance the other night, to be good enough amid this chase for potentially first in the division to give him those nights off. Because if you see slippage in his game, if you see signs of mental fatigue as much as physical fatigue, when he makes mistakes in reads or puck handling or little things like that, that's when you got to get him some rest and trust that you're going to be better off in the playoffs if he has it than trying to just keep riding him and hope it doesn't fall apart at the end.
Yeah, I look at their schedule. They play Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday this week. Then they get Sunday, Monday off again next week, and then it's Tuesday, Thursday. And he'll likely split one of the final back-to-backs against Vancouver. Brossoit is likely not playing both. I think you might play Brossoit on the first one and then have Talbot on the ninth. So then he gets Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off, or maybe they'll play him Saturday and give him 3 days off and get ready for the playoffs, either the 12th or the 13th.
Yeah, and then it's on the goalie coach to make sure he feels like he's on top of his game in practice, and that can be accomplished. I mean, you can't quite imitate a game, but you get to know a guy in terms of what makes him feel good and what makes him prepared for a game, and you make sure you find time to get that work in without necessarily wearing him out. It's a delicate balance, and those two will know it better than anyone else, and you do have to find that line, because he said it many times this year, he feels good when he plays a lot. Last thing you want him is out of that comfort zone when game one starts, like feeling like it's been too long since he's played. So there's enough games there to space that out and find that balance. But once it gets going, it's every second night. So you got to make sure that you are rested before it starts.
Kevin Woodley from Ingo Magazine at NHL.com joins us. Kevin, when you look at the numbers, you'd say, man, Dallas's goaltending is terrible. Lettinen, he just named second star of the week, however. Niemi's an obvious one, I think, to buy out, but you don't think there's any chance they would wisely buy out Lettinen?
Well, no, I mean, I've heard talking, and I wanted to touch on this because we talked about Niemi last week as a buyout candidate, and there has been talk of buying them both out in Dallas. And the part I never really got a chance to say last week, and lo and behold, you're right, like you said, he becomes the second star, is Kari Lettinen hasn't been as bad as the raw numbers, the overall save percentage indicates. When you take away, now their special teams, like their penalty killing is abhorrent. Like it's terrible. And believe me, I'm talking to you from Vancouver. I've seen some horrendous penalty killing here in the last couple of months, and Dallas is right up there with the Canucks in terms of ineptitude down a man. It's just bad. You take that away, though, and you take away also shorthanded goals against, and what do we think of when we think of shorthanded goals? Breakaways, two-on-ones, odd man rushes when a team makes a mistake up high at the point, gives away a puck, and the other team scoots down the other way, you know, usually with numbers or in a one-on-one situation. So you take away the special teams, and Kari Lettinen's 5-on-5, especially when you start sorting for shot quality, at least as best as we can measure it in terms of rush chances, shot location, and some of the factors that we can sort through out of the play-by-play data, Kari Lettinen goes from being one of the worst goalies in the league to top five in the NHL in adjusted 5-on-5 save percentage. So if you're the Stars, and clearly you need to make a change in goal, you need to find some better options. But I'd be careful about buying both of them out, and that has been suggested in some of the Dallas publications and by some of the people that follow that team on a regular basis. I'd be careful you're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater here, because I think Kari Lettinen, for a long time there, has been better, and despite being behind that defense for so long, has been better than some of the raw numbers and some of the narratives around him would indicate.
Now, Tuukka Rask, falling apart now. He had either an injury or an illness took him out. What's your thoughts on Rask and maybe even his post-game comments after that Tampa game last week?
Well, he wasn't very good in the Tampa game, and then he, you know, for the second straight season, he wasn't able to play a big game on the weekend, and Anton Khudobin went in and won that one for him and only gave up 18 shots, but he won it in a tight 2-1 game. Rask, I believe it was illness that kept him out last year in a crucial sort of do-or-die game at the end of the season. A minor injury this season, and you combine that with the Sochi Olympics and not being able to play in a semifinal game at the last minute because of illness, and there are some questions in Boston about his ability to deliver down the stretch. So, listen, you'd have to be inside their medical staff to truly know you know, whether this is a guy who's looking for an excuse not to play a big game or a guy who just has some bad luck that, you know, at crucial times. I would suggest that this is a team that overplayed him. You know, we talk about games played, especially early in the season. They rode him as hard, if not harder, than Edmonton did Talbot early this year. And he's a guy that has shown signs of breaking down physically a little bit when you play him too much. And they didn't, you know, Khudobin was 850 save percentage early in the year, spent some time in the minors. They couldn't get a win out of their backup, and they just kept going to that well. And I would argue that's what's causing them and what's causing Tuukka Rask being at 100%, you know, right now, compared to questions about, you know, whether he's, you know, got the mentality to stick it out when games get tight. The idea, as some in that market have suggested, that it's now Anton Khudobin's ball to roll with, and you sit, you know, a former Vezina Trophy winner in Tuukka Rask, seems kind of absurd to me, to be honest with you. Rask is an elite skilled goaltender. You know, we talk about Talbot playing an efficient game and how he can maybe play more games because his style doesn't task him or test him as much physically. Rask is on the opposite end of that spectrum. He's a pure skater, truly reliant on skill and reads, plays an aggressive game, can get caught. You know, it's the kind of game where he plays to the extremes, and he can look bad at times because of it. If his reads are off, if his timing is off, he doesn't square up on everything. He backs across the crease. He really is skill reliant. But the skills are so good that he gets away with it for long periods of time and more often than not. But eventually those types of goalies have ups and downs. And right now he's in what I would argue is just one of his normal down streaks. And when you compound that with the amount of extra physical exertion required to play his style compared to a Talbot, and then you compare the games played and it's not that far behind, especially when you account for time that Rask has missed, to me, it's just a guy who's been asked to do too much. And if the Boston Bruins are, as some suggested, laying the groundwork to move on from Tuukka Rask in the summer, I would suggest that even at $7 million a season, there should be a lot of teams lining up to take him on.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Kevin, it's interesting as you get this time of year. Anderson said he'll be okay. They were talking maybe a shot in the head or anything like that, so it didn't feel right. He said that it was the right decision for him to come out of the game. Now, I'm sure you've talked to a lot of goalies coming back right afterwards, and everyone probably, it impacts them differently. But for the Maple Leafs, you know, it's a massive factor for their team's success if he comes back. What's the challenge for a goalie that's maybe different than a player coming off concussion?
Well, the challenge, and again, we're not saying, and he hasn't said, that it is definitely a concussion. I think a lot of times symptoms, and the good news is Freddie Anderson knows this because I've talked to him about it through his time in Anaheim, actually, while he was sort of struggling with one, about some of the options for treatment, is sometimes you can get sort of concussion symptoms from what is essentially a neck injury, and sometimes just treating the neck injury will quickly alleviate some of the symptoms that we mix in with concussion. And Freddie's a guy that knows that. He also knows that sometimes you have to go outside the team to get that treatment, but he knows those treatment options exist. We've talked about it in the past. So that's the good sign. The challenge, if it truly is, you know, if you really do continue to feel off and you don't get the treatment to kind of reset that sort of sensation, that dull sensation behind the eye, some of the cognitive stuff that goes with it, is just tracking. I mean, I remember Ryan Miller after the Milan Lucic hit, talking to him the next season, and he was like, he came back and played, but he couldn't follow or track or keep up with a puck visually for the full 60 minutes of gameplay for months afterwards. And that's the thing, right? Whether it's neck or whether it's brain, your head's sort of always on a swivel as a goaltender, not just in terms of tracking the puck and finding that puck through bodies and legs and traffic and everything moving around you, but being able to sort of read what's going on in the layers around that, the backdoor pass, you know, when the puck's in the corner, when do you look off and make sure, you know, where the other players are on the ice. At the NHL level, these guys have to track the puck, and we talk a lot about that as goaltenders, but they also need to know where the other four guys are on the ice and how the play is sort of unfolding around them. And the ability to process that at speed and the ability to kind of turn your head quickly to find those markers, you know, it's up there with an NFL quarterback in terms of the challenge mentally. And so if your neck is sore or you're not moving quickly or you're not able to focus those eyes quickly enough, you know, that's going to show up a lot quicker, I believe, for a goaltender than it does for a player who might be able to just dump it in a corner and go for a hit. And it's, you know, it's just a little more obvious. Because when you make a mistake, it usually ends up in the back of the net. Whereas a forward who's maybe not feeling it with his hands can dump it in instead of trying to make a move at the blue line, can sort of play away from the weaknesses he's experiencing. A goaltender, there's nowhere to go. And your ability to sort of follow and find that puck, if it's compromised in any way, even in a game where a tenth of a second can be the difference, if you're a second behind at this level, you're done. And so that's the challenge for a goaltender, is you just cannot afford to be off mentally in any small way. And so I need to make sure that you feel back to yourself completely before you're in a game situation.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com. Kevin, is it Fleury versus Murray? Is it an easy decision to go with Murray?
Yeah, you know, I know there's been some ups and downs lately for him, but I still think it is. Might be nice, as Jim Rutherford has kind of suggested throughout this whole thing, to have that option. The one part about that option for Pittsburgh that I don't think gets talked about a lot is, listen, there's more cape on Matt Murray now than there was before. That was a challenge, a real challenge in the playoffs last year. Talking to Washington, is they just didn't have a lot of film on this guy. There were some tendencies that by the end of the playoffs, teams were trying to target in terms of post-integration, movement to the blocker side versus the glove side, Especially on power plays, that's where you have the extra man. You can kind of try and run things towards a goaltender's weakness if you spotted it. But there wasn't a lot of tape to break down those weaknesses. There's more of that now. I don't think it's a huge part of the ups and downs he's had this year, but it's the kind of thing where if you see signs of it in a playoff series, if you were to go from one to the other as the Pittsburgh Penguins, you're throwing a massive changeup at the other team because their styles are different and their tendencies are different. And as much as Marc-Andre Fleury has sort of calmed down his game under the direction of goalie coach Mike Bales over the past 3 years, and I think that's why he's a more consistent goalie over that stretch and has been a better goalie overall over that stretch, there's still a more active element about him, whereas Murray's a little more positionally, a little more sort of neutral in his initial positioning and a little more reliant, not reliant on technique, but, you know, just bigger presence, less active in the net. And, you know, if you're trying to throw off an opposition attack, it's a nice option to have. But for now, I think because of everything he did last year, because of the fact that, you know, even though there have been some ups and downs lately, you know, he's still, what is he, like in the top 923 save percentage, just outside the top 10, pretty much neck and neck with a Carey Price. I think Matt Murray's your guy going in.
Devan Dubnyk, what's up lately?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Interesting. We talked about this in terms of some of the curious moves of Bruce Boudreau, but it's not entirely on them. There was a point earlier in the season where he started to sort of what I would call sit down in his stance a little bit. And when he sits down in his stance, we talked about this with Carey Price as well. When the butt gets low, everything has to open up to move rather than closing on his movements. Tends to kind of lift up on shots rather than tracking down into them and closing on them. There's been a little bit of that in his game. I think for the most part, though, I'm watching a Minnesota Wild team that's starting to scramble a little bit in its own end. Watched that one of the goals the other in the game against Detroit. And what really jumped out to me was it was a screenshot from the point. But between the point shot and Dubnyk, there was a layer of like five players. And three of them were Minnesota Wild. And they essentially created like this massive screen that almost ran entirely from the top of the circle all the way to right in front of the goaltender. So he never even had a chance to see that shot. And when I talked to him earlier in the season, one of the keys he talked about was how good the Wild were at only blocking shots when it was needed. Top of the circles down, off quick plays, where you know getting in the way of that shot was important because it was a quality shot. It was something where you were helping your goaltender out. And not worrying so much about what we call the 99%ers. In other words, if my goalie's going to stop it 99% of the time because it's a harmless floating point shot, then worry about rebounds, worry about clearing out the front of the net. Don't worry about blocking that shot. And this was something that he said Scott Stevens, as an assistant coach, had been a big part of. And I found that interesting because, you know, Marty Brodeur playing behind Scott Stevens, that's the one thing he used to talk to us about when he was playing, or talk to me about when he was playing, you know, asking him goalie questions. He really felt like all those screens were just, the word he used to use was grenades. He felt like there were grenades going off in front of him because he couldn't find those pucks. And that if you, in New Jersey, the system was, if you just let me see it, we'll be fine. And it felt like there, or it certainly seemed, talking to Dubnyk, like there's a lot of that going on in Minnesota earlier this year, where they'd adopted that philosophy that, hey, if it's an outside shot, let's just clear the lane and let them see it. And now I'm watching a team that seems almost not to trust things, trust that system as much. And so, you know, when we've talked about this with other goalies, everybody's trying to do everybody else's job, and rather than just leave that point shot, you've got guys jumping in front of it and inadvertently creating screens and getting in the way. And, you know, it's a pretty quickly that will snowball. You try and do the goalie's job, he tries to do your job, and pretty soon nobody is doing their own job. And there's a little bit of that. You watch them, the Red Wings hem them in their zone for long periods of time, uncharacteristically so in that game on the weekend. And they just look like a team that's chasing it in their own end right now, and that wasn't the case early this season. And certainly that's played a role, along with the, you know, sort of the physical changes in Dubnyk's game, in kind of the slider. Now, the interesting thing is, about mid-December-ish, similar things in Dubnyk's game in terms of sitting down on clean shots, sitting down a little bit in his stance, on lateral movement and causing some delays on cross-ice plays. But he got away with it because they were scoring goals back then. They were still winning games. They were giving up odd-man rushes, and those delays in his movement were slowing him down and costing him goals getting across on odd-man rushes. But they were still winning because they were cheating for offense that created the odd-man rushes against, but they were scoring on their chances too. Well, now they're not scoring on their chances, and everything is just rolling the wrong way for the Minnesota Wild.
Kev, great stuff, man. We got a few weeks left in the regular season, and then we will have a real breakdown of the playoffs for goalie by goalie. That'll be great. Look forward to it.
Well, and I got to say, NHL.com has stepped up big time again this year and supplied me with the resources and time necessary, so I will actually be doing breakdowns of every single goal given up by every single goalie in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Ooh,
and so
nice.
Once we start rolling those out, we'll be able to talk about those.
Oh, where the puck's
going and why.
That'll be fun. Look forward to it, Kev.
All right. Thanks, guys.